Welcome to another edition of The List, a Right Fiction podcast. We've got a wonderful show to you today. Maybe it's a terrible show. I don't know. It's about our favorite Guilty Pleasure albums. Before we get started, if you love the pod, please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on your listening app. It helps us reach new listeners like you. Also, be sure to check out our companion Spotify playlist with all our picks that we mention in the pod. The link is in the show details. Now let's get to it. There are some albums out there that you listen to that you sort of, you know, keep to yourself. These are the albums that if your friends or bandmates or neighbors knew you listened to, they definitely give you crap for it and probably say things like, "How can you listen to that garbage?" Or, "I thought you knew about music. That is not music." Or even, this is the worst, "You know, this makes me think a little less of you." While we generally don't like sharing these albums with people, we still love them dearly and listen to them often. So on today's show, we're going to try and break down the stigma of listening to terrible music as we share our favorite Guilty Pleasure albums. So hang out with us for a bit and see if your list matches ours. Now on to the show. And of course, today, got the regular guys here. Mr. Freddie Berman.
Woo! Ding, ding.
Brendan McGeehan.
Greetings.
That's my Irish accent. Adam Zelensky. I don't know what kind of accent that was.
It wasn't Eastern European, Scottish. That's for sure.
And I am Aaron Brown, the John Stocknuff podcast, dishing out assists left and right. And on today's show, we are going to go with Freddie first. So, Freddie, what is your number three favorite Guilty Pleasure album, sir?
Okay, I went a little oddball here.
Sure did.
These are just things that I listen to when I'm in a different mood. And this is an album called Brian Jones Presents the Pipes of Pan at Juzuka. And it's basically some Moroccan drummers and pipe players smoked a lot of hashish, sat around and tried to invoke Pan. And Brian Jones was really into this music in Morocco. And this was actually captured in a performance in 1968, but not released until 1971 on Rolling Stones Records.
Yikes.
And it is said that the song Painted Black is influenced a lot by this kind of music, but Painted Black was released a couple of years before this was. But I find this music fascinating, and the whole concept of Brian Jones Presents is even more fascinating to me. Right. So that's my third pick. Brian Jones Presents the Pipes of Pan at Juzuka.
Well, that's a nice guy pick, Freddie. Brendan, what is your number three favorite Guilty Pleasure album?
Okay, guys. Well, I'm going to begin to cash in any cool chips that I have remaining.
Maybe we should,
That's the whole point,
right?
I usually have a pseudonym for you, man. I just call you a Gian Brent.
Let's see.
Lost everybody there.
We'll try that one out. Sure. Okay.
Well, or maybe a Brendan with the E today.
Yeah. Then I can blame it on somebody else. All right. Well, from Brian Jones to something completely different. My number three. I'm on Team Tay-Tay. I can't deny the power of her 2014 record, 1989, Taylor Swift in all of her glory, for lack of a better word. I mean, I was hooked when I first heard Shake It Off, and then I dove into the record more, Bad Blood, among others. It's just great, and as much as I want to hate it, I can't, and I will occasionally spin this record. So Taylor Swift, 1989, my number three.
Okay. We're off to a great start here. Adam, what is your number three favorite Guilty Pleasure album, sir?
All right, I'm going to go from the metaphysical, not actually 1989 of Taylor Swift to the actual 1994 for one of the bangers of the year, Hootie and the Blowfish's Cracked Rear View. We all loved it when it came out. You can't lie. Y'all did. Even Aaron, you loved it when it came out.
I did.
Yeah. And there was three like bona fide huge hits. And I mean, and I was listening to it on the elliptical the other day and it was great. And I think, I mean, really, I mean, they you listen to it now and they do sound kind of like a bar band. They're not super like, you know, they're good. But they're a bar band. But then, and Darius Rucker's had a huge country career since, but like, they really, those, you know, as Freddie the Song Guy, those songs really hit. I mean, and to have three huge hits on any record is great. And it's really, it kind of set them up to not really hang around because you couldn't top this. And I still pop it on and Hold My Hand still gets my goat every time. Every time. Cracked Review, number three.
Nice. And here is my number three favorite Guilty Pleasures album, excuse me. And it is from 1983. It's Madonna's self-titled debut album. And you know, listening to this album, it's pretty terrible. But you can't deny when I hear Borderline and I hear Holiday and I hear Everybody, man, I go to karaoke bars and just like talk to random women and be like, yo, could you pick Borderline, please? Like, love hearing it so much. That song is one of my favorites of all time. So that's why it's my number three favorite Guilty Pleasure album. Now we're kicking back up to the top to you, to Freddie. Freddie, what is your number two favorite Guilty album?
Okay, number two. An infamous guy named Phil Spector. Put out a record, and it's Phil Spector's, called Phil's Flip Sides, and they're mostly, it's a lot of instrumental stuff, and I guess they were B-sides of recordings that he put out, and some of it's like corny, but I mean, you know, it's a little bit of surf, a little bit of jazz, a little bit of R&B. I mean, it's all the great players that played on his, you know, wall of sound recordings, but I don't know, maybe they were messing around in the studio and somebody came up with a riff and they just played that riff for 5 minutes and then people took solos. It's something that I listen to. It's kind of like a curiosity for me. So that's a guilty pleasure of mine. Phil's Flip Side, the Phil Spector Wall of Sound Orchestra.
Nice. Brendan with an E. What is your favorite, number two favorite Guilty Pleasure album?
Right. Okay. Well, I will say for lunch, guys, I had peanut butter and banana to fortify myself for the onslaught that I'm going to get for this, because my number two, I went with Elvis, 1969 from Elvis in Memphis. And okay, we'll get all into it, but I will say when I was a kid, I remember when my dad first explained to me what Elvis was, like it just seemed like a cartoon character. And I think as a kid, I was sort of drawn to that. So I had this sort of childlike interest in Elvis. And then I grew up and I found out how problematic Elvis is in all sorts of ways for stealing music and blah, blah, blah. We'll get into that. But anyway, this record, I think, takes some of his brightest moments. This is like mid-career Elvis. You've got just like cringeworthy, but excellent songs on there. Gentle on My Mind, In the Ghetto, Suspicious Minds. Some of his best work post like the pop star Elvis that everyone came to know. This was like Elvis trying to be sort of legit. And the band sounds killer. So if nothing else, it's a really nice sounding record. Number two, from Elvis in Memphis.
Nice.
Yikes. Okay. Adam, what is your number two favorite Guilty Pleasure album?
I have that Elvis album on vinyl, and it is wonderful. It's a wonderful album. I don't know what the guilt is all about. I don't
great
know.
You band.
Know
what? Great band.
I think I might think less of you two now.
I think Well, I can understand your side of the conversation, but you know, I'm also the one that separates the art from the world.
Come on, man! Suspicious Minds. It's an amazing track.
Yeah, we'll have something. We'll have something to go there for today, right? Yeah, we're getting, but yeah, that I saw that one on the list. I'm like, oh, here we go, here we go. But okay, well, for my number two, I'm back into 1984 for a wonderful duo of George Michael and Andrew Ridgely, otherwise known as Wham, for "Make It Big."
Wham.
I mean, this is the sugariest pop from the planet Sugar Shack. But I tell you, it gets me going. I mean, you know, everyone knows, you know, "Wake Me Up." I mean, that's just, you know, it's an international. It might be a galactic hit at this point. And then actually, I even like "Everything She Wants" even a little bit more. It's a little longer, but I really just great song. You know, everything. It's just a fun album. I always enjoy it. I never hear it. I'm like, oh, not now. It's all, you know. And but yeah, it's super sugary, and it's not really of my, you know, my regular bread and butter music. So hence, it's a little of a guilty pleasure. "Make It Big," number two.
You're killing it.
It's Adam. My turn for Aaron. My turn for a favorite guilty pleasure album, and I'm going to go to my number two album. Came out in 2002. When it came out, I was embarrassed to tell people about that I liked it. I'm still pretty embarrassed about it, but it's Justin Timberlake's debut album called "Justified," which is a terrible name. And I mean, a lot of the songs are just terrible. The lyrics are just like, one of them is like, "I'm not green or I'm an alien." It's, oh my God, it's terrible. But there are some songs that I just really absolutely love, with the top one being "Still on My Brain," which I can listen to that song over and over again. And please don't tell anybody that I love this album. We're going to go to you, Freddie. What's your number one favorite guilty album?
Drum roll. This is so weird.
Freddie, yeah. I gotta set this up. Freddie, this is so weird.
For me.
Go ahead. For you. For anyone. But you, for you, specifically.
I mean, you guys know, and anybody who's been listening to the pod by now knows, I'm not the biggest hip hop guy. Not that I have anything against it, but I
get off my lawn. You're the get off my lawn guy.
Exactly.
Come on.
Exactly. However, this album, my number one pick, 2001, Dr. Dre album, sometimes called The Chronic, 2001, is a masterpiece, and it's also just something I love to listen to in my car when I'm driving.
Oh, yeah.
Is this when you're hitting little kids and stuff?
The rims and bumping, you know, doing the gangster lean. No, seriously. I just love this record.
People's bumpers and stuff? Are you hitting people's bumpers and stuff?
I'm trying not to. Doing the speed limit. This is a great album. I love it. I love the flow. I love the beats. I love the production. I love everything about it. So there you have it. My number one.
With a bullet.
Dr. Dre, 2001. The Chronic.
Speed limit.
Yes. Exactly.
Doing speed limit to The Chronic. Yeah.
Yeah, baby. Chief
officer, I was just listening to The Chronic.
The second one, not the first one. The second
one. Officer, like, you got to get out the car, dog. No, there's only one Chronic around here. Yeah, you got to go. You got to go in. Anyway, Brendan, the yikes factor is going up here.
Yes.
What is your number one favorite guilty pleasure album?
I am pushing all in. All of my cool chips are now in the pot. For my number one. Oh boy. Okay. This was hard, guys. This not that was my number one, just hard to admit, but I don't know. What can I say? I grew up in a beach town, and so this record just was around. It was unavoidable. And I really came to love it. And this came out before he sort of wore out his welcome in that whole scene. And so the record I'm talking about is Jack Johnson's 2001 Brushfire Fairy Tales. And you know what? I listened to it again recently to revisit for this episode, and I think it holds up. There are some nice songs on there. I stand by it. I think everything after he did just became a joke. Like, he became the butt of his own joke and kind of formulated this whole image that that has stuck with him. But yeah, I stand by it, which shows you just how white I am. Brush Fire Fairy Tale is my number one.
Nice. Adam. See Brendan's whiteness and raise it a whiteness.
Oh boy! Yeah, let's see. If
we're talking with the number, of, with your number one.
Speaking of the whitest album possible, here I got kind of an oddball, and I'll get into why it's a guilty pleasure here. It's Miley Cyrus and her Dead Pets with a Z from 2017. Now on it's in the canon of Miley Cyrus, this is a bit of an strange one. This is just very heavily talking about drugs.
Time out. And sex. She has a cannon.
Well, I mean, she's been around.
I guess so. I guess if you count the Hannah Montana days, I guess
she's got like what? It's probably 6, 7, 8 albums.
All right.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I mean, you know, she's living the dream, baby. Living the dream.
You do love this album. You do.
I can tell. But yeah, because she did a lot of writing with like a Wayne Coyne of Flaming Lips fame, and you can the fingerprints are all over it, and there's all some great it. Like great moments from that, but the cringe part is that like it's so sophomoric. It's just there's times where I'm just like, my God, you're just like you sound like a 12-year-old kid talking about smoking weed or just like really weird sex. Like it's like moments of brilliance on there. And then there's moments of like, oh, what are you doing? What are you doing? And it's like, I think they, you know, maybe her manager or people around her are like, Miley, you're really going a little off the handle here. It's like, we get it. You like a lot of drugs and sex and stuff, but it's like, your brand is kind of dying. And, she went a little middle of the road after this and her stuff's still okay. But I feel like if she could have harnessed the energy of this album, and get a more mature version of it, it could be like, you know, amazing. And but this kind of just showed a little glimpse of it. And but the weird sophomoric stuff just makes it where I'm.
Question.
Yeah.
Is this before or after Wrecking Ball?
After. So like Wrecking Ball was kind of the beginning of the, you know, extreme.
Right.
And that's the Cry for Help album.
I remember when this came out, it was, I remember one of the videos was very disturbing.
Yeah. But if you noticed after this, there was a bit of a turn. There's a bit of a turn of image.
The video is disturbing for Freddie. So he was like, oh man, let me put on a chronic and totally get back to
and year one.
I need to the next episode. I need to drive 55.
Oh god, what have we done?
But the guilt, yeah, it's insane. There's great moments, but the guilty pleasure portion of this comes with I'm not into the direct sophomoric stuff. But I wish you would come back to the dark side and harness this down the road. But yeah, Dead Pets number one.
Gotcha. Okay. This is Aaron Brown, the John Stockton of this podcast here. My number one favorite guilty pleasure album is an album that came out in 1987 by an artist called Ladies Love Cool James, I think. LL Cool J is his name. And the album is Bigger and Deafer. Now, you might be asking yourself, well, why is this a guilty pleasure? Because it has some like hits on it. Like, I'm Bad is maybe one of the greatest rap songs of all time. The reason why I put this as my guilty pleasure is because when I listen to this album, I go straight to the actual best song, and it's I Need Love. And so if you're rocking, you're in your car and you're blasting I Need Love and you're singing all the lyrics, people just look weird at you. And for all the years, I know all the lyrics and I just like rock this song so hard. But if you actually like listen to it, it's pretty terrible. And it's probably been pretty terrible since 1987. So that's why it's my number one favorite guilty pleasure album. And with that, we're going to take a short break and come back with all the discussion. Hold on. And we are back. And I'm going to go to my buddy Adam to talk about his pick, Cracked Rear View, 1994, Hootie and the Blowfish. And the reason I want to talk to you about why it was one of your guilty pleasure albums is because I listened to this album recently, and by golly, it is amazing. I don't understand why it could be anybody's guilty pleasure. So why is it not just like a regular pleasure, Adam?
And you want to know why I find it interesting that I'm being asked by you is because, back in our day, when Aaron and I were in a band in Scranton, for those that don't know the racial divide of all of us, I am very white and Aaron is black.
I'm very black.
Very
all day black, baby.
I don't know if I'm in a position to call you very black, so I just went with black. but the bands we were in, we had Aaron, a black guy at the lead with a backing band of white musicians. So how many times did we hear, "Hey, Hootie and the Blowfish"? You know, it just became Hootie. This. And I think just from the constantly hearing that, I think it created a slight resentment to the whole thing. You know, and really I'm with you, Aaron. I was listening to it, I'm like, this is just a pretty wonderfully written.
This is wonderful. Album. That's what I was listening to. Yeah.
But the whole thing, God, how many times did you get called Hootie back in the day by even just in joking, you know?
Last year, I was like, "Oh man, you sound like Hootie. Wow, this is great." And like, you know, nowadays I'm like, you know what? This dude has had a heck of a career.
True.
Yeah. I wish I could be Hootie in a book.
It's like, thank you.
You know, yeah. Just call me Darius Rucker. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Mother sucker. You know what I mean?
But I think really and what happens when you're, you know, in adolescent, if you, you know, you, everyone did like it, but then once the next big thing came along, you know, you were all of a sudden you weren't cool if you liked this because, you know, Hootie's so lame. So, yeah, I mean, and it's been, what, 26 years since, and now you can kind of, you know, push all that away. And yeah, it's, I mean, I guess maybe we could call it a retroactive guilty pleasure because I never stopped really liking the album. I more just resented the, the constant barraging of the band.
So true.
Yeah. So there's
that. Everyone got into the Spin Doctors when that album came out. Kidding.
Oh,
associate that era, like that same. I could be totally wrong, but.
Oh, the hippies that sort of played hippie music.
Yeah, yeah. Blues Traveler. There, it's all.
Yeah.
Bush was in there too.
The same.
Bush had their big album there. Yeah.
Goo Goo Dolls, Train.
Yeah.
Yep. I smell an episode. Anyway.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Terrible albums from the 1990s.
You know, I have to agree with you, Adam. I think Cracked Rear View is good, but it's not cool. Like I don't even, and I think the album was only cool for a minute when records that sounded like that were cool, but like it holds up as being good. Like I think that undeniably that the songs are good, but it's definitely not cool. But
not cool.
I will say this brings me back because I remember when I was like probably too young to be doing this, I used to stay up really late and watch Letterman. And I remember when this was like their big breakout record. And you know, with late night, guests used to get bumped like all the time if they ran late or something. And Hootie and the Blowfish were supposed to be the musical guests for Letterman, and they kept getting bumped so often that Letterman started making jokes about them and like, "Oh, we don't have Hootie couldn't make it. We just have the Blowfish tonight." He would just like riff on this, and then eventually they did make it on, which obviously would be a big catapult to anyone's career. But that just stuck out in my mind as like being very memorable to me for some reason.
I think that might like kind of equate to their coolness. You know what I mean? Like nobody's bumping Radiohead. You know what I mean?
Right. But, yeah. Hootie didn't mind getting bumped, I guess.
Yeah. Well,
wouldn't dare bump Radiohead. You wouldn't dare.
They're not going to go into the dressing room and like break stuff. You know what I mean?
Right.
They're going to be like, "Oh, well, I guess we'll just go to the next town."
Doggone it.
They were like, "Oh, I just got done ironing my plaid."
Yeah. Okay. So I got to go to you, Freddie, because you haven't been saying anything. And one of your picks is just ridiculous.
They're all ridiculous. Which one?
one of them is like way ridiculous. And this is Brian Jones presents the Pipes and Pan of Jujuka.
Yeah.
I didn't have any sort of expectations on this thing.
That's a good thing.
Put this in my ears, and I almost wanted to fight you, Freddie. I just
come on. Like, you had to be high, man. You had to be high.
I was like, how dare he? How dare he subject me to this? Adam, what do you got?
You're making me feel guilty of my pleasure.
Well, we're talking along the timeline of this. 68. Was Brian Jones still in the Stones when they did this? And then they released it on the Stones label. I mean, after he died.
That's like, true. Good.
Was this like, was this like they kick him out and they're like, oh, yeah. Oh, I just made this album, guys. You want to put it on your label? No.
Oh, wait. So, yeah, he died in 69.
Yeah. But he was kicked out a little before.
Yikes.
Not much before.
Oh, okay, so it's just like before, like maybe this is what they're like, okay, Brian, you're getting a little weird.
This is parting gift. No,
so he died July 3rd, 1969. And then they did that big concert in the park and they released all the butterflies and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
So he died shortly after they kicked him out of the band.
Oh, it was like it was real quick. So this was like just before he got kicked out.
So wait, going back to the album though, I'm gonna go to you, Brendan. Did you listen to this and what were your thoughts?
Yes, I did listen to it. And
were you high?
Not enough. I mean, this record was like the cherry on top of being by far our strangest playlist we have ever done on this show. So like, and especially enjoying this playlist, enjoy being a loose term in shuffle mode, like tunes from this would come on. And this was just the weirdest listening experience for me. But I will say, and I don't know it well enough to say, but there were like one or two pieces on it that are like, okay, this is kind of cool. And then there was like stuff that was like strangely reminiscent of Polka or something that I just could not get down with.
Polka.
I knew you were going to find something. Brendan, I knew you were going to find something that you liked in this record. I knew it. That's why I went to you. I was like, Brendan's going to say something smart or like, you know, smarty pants and be like, well, you know, if you look at it with the red lighting in on the corner of it, there is a picture of Jesus and it's wonderful.
That sounds like me. Although I will say, shifting from that, I could not get down with this Phil Spector thing. I just really thought it was like truly terrible.
It's bizarre.
Really?
It's really
I thought that was pretty good. I was like, Freddie, how come you did not put this on our cocktail party episode? This is total cocktail party music. You don't think so?
It just might be. See, these two, it's funny. Two of the albums, well, all three of the albums I picked are albums that I have saved to, quote unquote, to the albums section of my Spotify. Mm. So hence, they're all guilty pleasure just because of that fact.
Mm.
Gotcha. And I definitely have some strange stuff on there.
No doubt about that. Okay. Okay. Brendan, let's go to your Taylor Swift thing, because that is a little different for me. Well, explain yourself, sir.
Well, I think for me, I have a part of me that can deeply appreciate the sugariest of pop music. And I think if you're going to go full on sugar diabetes attack, you might as well go Taylor Swift, because say what you want about her as a person, as a whatever, she can write some songs and she has a team around her that can produce them in a really compelling way. And this record just does that. I mean, I think it's hard to argue about the pop merits of 1989.
And so that's a great point. How do you, Brendan, and how do you, Adam, kind of pitting you against each other with your picks, Miley and Taylor, who do you think is best?
All right, well,
best at what?
That's a good question. I got to say, as an innocent bystander.
So I will come at Adam for this one, because I do think there is a Miley versus Tay-Tay Rift unofficially. And I was thinking about that Miley record for my list, but I have to say, I think it's, in terms of guilty pleasures, a safe pick. And I don't think Adam has cashed in all his cool chips in making that pick, because you can always fall back on, hey, you know, Wayne Coyne was involved, so therefore it's like kind of cool.
Shots fired. Pew, pew, pew.
So Wayne Coyne involved in anything immediately means cool. It's not a guilty pleasure.
I think it means it's at least a little cool.
Your retort, sir. Your retort.
So I should have done Bangers, that Bangers album.
There you go.
I tell you, it's not about the guilty part. As I mentioned, the guilty part was the sophomoric stuff, which, I mean, you know, I mean, there's like, I want you to bang my box. It's just like, come on.
Right. Like, it's like, is she okay? But,
That's what I'm like, because there's times where I'm like, wow, yeah, you and Wayne did a great job. And other times I'm like, did you just like eat a bunch of ecstasy and like go to the recording studio and then just keep it? You know,
sheets of acid.
But I have to, you know, I will have to say, surprisingly, I think Taylor Swift is the more talented and more consistent, really. Because, I mean, Miley went off in this little experimentation, but she kind of really reeled it back in. And now I don't find her stuff nearly as interesting. I still think she's got it in her, but I think a little, she had a little elf in her ear telling her about, you're really ruining your image here. You're going to throw away bazillions of dollars unless you kind of come back to the middle of the road and go on The Voice and kind of, you know, rehash, you know? So, but, I mean, and, but yeah, Taylor's released two albums in 2020, didn't she?
She did. Yeah. And she is trying to hop on the cool factor too. She's trying to get some cool cred. So her version of bringing in a Wayne Coyne is bringing in Bon Iver. So that was on her latest record. She collaborated with him and one of the dudes from The National.
So who's the trailblazer here?
Yikes.
There.
Yikes.
Everyone wants a piece of some legitimate indie cool cred.
Freddie, what do you got, man?
Speaking of, didn't Ryan Adams re-record 1989, like song for song?
Yes.
Yeah,
it's good.
That's pretty cool. That's
that
pretty,
one
speaking
song.
Speaking of cool cred.
Yeah, I mean, that's really cool. When he did that song, Bad Blood song that he did, redid it, man, I love that song when he did it.
Yeah.
And he's a bad dude and all that stuff, right. But man, love that song he did. I just love it.
Yeah, it's good.
It's really, and then like I'm gonna weigh in here between Miley Cyrus and I cannot say what you say her name is.
Tai
Tai.
K-Tay.
But I gotta say, Miley Cyrus's voice, she has a wonderful voice.
Yeah,
she has a nice quality of a voice.
She can do a lot of different stuff with it too.
Yeah, I mean, I think she needs just better songs, and that's, and call it a day. Better songs and less weirdo stuff.
She's got like a tiny bit of the Stevie Nicks kind of sounding like a goat, but in a good way.
And she's not too big, but she can really belt. She's got some pipes, you know. She's kind of a petite little girl that can really, she can really rip.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she caught everyone's attention when she did Jolene. Was that at the Grammys or whatever that was? It was like, okay, she's an artist. She's got more legs than just the Hannah Montana thing.
Yeah.
Woo. But speaking of, I'm gonna go to Aaron while we're talking about young pop prodigies. Justin Timberlake, wow. Like, that's not even his best record.
I'm not going to, it's bad. It's nothing I can defend on this one. It's bad. But, man, that when he sings that, I listened to this album last night in, you know, awesome preparation for the pod. And, man, I must have played that song still on my brain like 10 times straight. And then at the end of the song, la, 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 la. Oh, yeah. I could just listen to this album just for that song. But the other stuff he does with Pharrell and stuff, I love it. I just love it. It's some really great stuff there.
But like,
Adam, what do you got?
My thing with Timberlake, and I just like that you made the choices. I remember just seeing like live performances where he's like jumping around a keyboard and he does all this fantastic. I mean, he's just unbelievable multi-tool musician. But yeah, I'm just like, I don't know. I wish I liked your music. You know, it's like you do it well. I'm just not into it. And as of recent, my kid's favorite movie is Trolls World Tour. So I've been getting a heavy dose of modern Timberlake at the moment. He's one of the he's the co-lead, so he and they do a lot of stuff.
Brendan, did you want to say something else about that?
Well, I'm just going to throw this out there, and not that it's a direct parallel, but I can't help but be a little bothered by how much he rips off Michael Jackson, and why isn't Justin Timberlake considered the 21st century Elvis? The way that
they're both from Memphis, they got that.
Yeah, that's an excellent parallel, and I do think he is. He totally rips off Michael Jackson, and I totally hate him for that. But this song is that song, and a couple other songs on here are fire. So it's just like, you know, I can't be that hater all the time. You know what I mean? It's like gotta be an hour. I do. I give it a good effort, but I can't be a hater all the time. Speaking of the whole 21st century Elvis, yo, I tried to listen to that Elvis stuff on the Spotify playlist. I couldn't even stomach it, man. I just was like, the longer I listened, the more angry I got. And maybe that's definitely a shortcoming of mine, but also it's how terrible he is. So somebody tell me why I should think differently about this.
Come on.
Someone else besides me. It was my pick. I've already said my piece.
You're going the rubber ball defense here. All right. Well, I'll go on. I mean, I grew up with a lot of Elvis. I have a lot of my late aunt was a massive Elvis fan, and I've had lots of Elvis records over the years. And I've always just kind of known this stuff and enjoyed this stuff. I understand the cultural appropriation, you know. I mean, and you know, I mean, you know, I agree with it, but I mean, I think Elvis has become kind of the lightning rod for all cultural appropriation from that era. And it's like,
well, it's just because he was the most popular, right?
Yeah, but
like,
I mean
Pat Boone was terrible too, but he just wasn't popular.
Come on, don't even say their names in the same breath.
Well, come on, they did the same thing. They did the same.
No, absolutely thing. Not.
Well, I mean, but if we're gonna go here, and I'm happy to go here, we have to also pull in the Stones. We also have to pull in Led Zeppelin. I mean, they were
any rock
terrible offenders. Absolutely.
For sure.
It's based in the blues. Any rock band. It's every rock band.
For sure.
But to bring it back to the center real quick with Elvis and something Freddie mentioned earlier, which is a big part of what I like is his band. Elvis's band was fantastic.
And well, the Memphis Boys. These are studio musicians. These are the same guys that played on Aretha Franklin's records. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, you can hear it.
And Graham Parsons are the solo records.
These guys are some of the best musicians in the world. I'm getting excited here now. I'm not a huge Elvis fan, but my grandmother was. But I mean, Suspicious Mind and In the Ghetto are two of the greatest records ever made. You need to sometimes take off your bias glasses and put on your listening glasses. Did that make sense?
I gotta get me a pair of them.
I'm loving the metaphors in this. This pod is coming up with some of the coolest metaphors ever. Aaron, coming from your background, I can understand, you know, the hate for Elvis, and you know, Public Enemy really, you know,
right,
took him to task in the late
'80s.
And
I was just thinking in my head,
and I love that record too.
Yeah, cool.
Elvis was a hero to me, but he wasn't to me. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm glad you're quoting some rap, Freddie. Because
thank you, man.
I know you must be a big rap aficionado, because that your number one pick doesn't make any sense at all.
None. But speaking of which, I have a question for you. You mentioned I Need Love. Have you ever heard Luca Bloom's cover version of that?
No, I don't. I didn't even know who Luca Bloom is.
He's I don't know if he's Irish or British singer-songwriter. But one of his big hits is a cover of him singing I Need Love. Just guitar and voice. I'll send it to you.
Are we getting into New Age Elvis thing here, or?
Different Elvis.
You know what I'm saying? With Luca Bloom and I Need Love?
I think we're getting the Elvis metaphors here. We're going a little too.
we're mixing them, perhaps.
Yeah.
I tell you what, guys, here's the thing with this Elvis stuff, the Papoon stuff, with all that kind of stuff.
Don't mention their names together.
I can take it to the, the nth degree. And often in my head, I do. And I think that might be part of the reason why I am such a hater.
That's fair. No, I mean, Elvis was really terrible. I mean, it was almost, it was painful for me to put this record on there, but I couldn't deny.
Or did you guys see the, so recently the Ma Rainey's Black Bottom came out?
Yeah, I just watched
it. I watched it. It was great.
Yeah. So in that, and I was in the, you know, I was watching and at the end, right, where the trumpet player, right, he, this is spoilers for everyone, spoilers. But he had that song he wrote, and then he gave it to the guy, and he said, "Hey, we're not going to do it." And then he brought in this other band, and they did it, and he's like, "Oh yeah, we're going to make a lot of money." Yeah.
And they were all white,
and
it was horrible. Man,
it happens so much that, like, yes, you want to like not think about that,
right?
You know, you just hear the music or whatever, and be like, "Oh, that's cool," but man, it just happens so much that it's just like. Well, you know, it's part and parcel of the thing, right?
So here's the thing. Here's the question. Regards Elvis. Forget about Pat Boone. I don't even want to hear that guy's name.
I might say it just to rally a change.
Just to give my coat. So here's the thing. Do you blame Elvis for that or Sam Phillips? Because Sam Phillips' whole M.O., was to try to find a white man that sounded like a black man. Elvis was just hanging out, you know, learning the blues from the cats in Memphis. He was really feeling it. He was into it. Came in to make a birthday greeting for his mom. Sam Phillips heard him and said, "Whoa, whoa, whoa. Who's this kid?" That's what happened. So do you blame Elvis or do you blame Sam Phillips? Whose fault is that?
You know, you're talking to me or are you talking to those guys?
I'm talking to everybody.
I blame them all.
Yeah.
I'm talking to the world.
Oh, yeah. They're all guilty.
I blame them all.
For sure.
Yeah, I don't have quite the, I understand the hang up of it. I don't quite have it. I mean, I also come from a background and, you know, small town, Nowheresville, and I heard Elvis all the time and, you know, didn't even learn. I didn't learn, but I wasn't as aware of the whole cultural appropriation factor until, you know, I left my little bubble there.
And is that also to say that rockabilly as a whole, which is really what he was doing initially, is BS and not a valid form of music? There's many questions here.
Many questions.
And many issues.
I cut myself off from being a total hater. I'm going to stop that part there because I just want to make sure we hit one of my favorite groups of all time.
We got to come back to this one day, though, and do a whole hour on it.
Absolutely. I'm
with you, Aaron. We don't want this to take over, but man, yeah. you could really open up a bunch of wormholes.
I'm going to listen to Public Enemy for like a week beforehand. Boy, I'm gonna be spitting fire. Anyway,
Cool J.
Yes. Anyway, Wham, Make It Big. Yo, this album is so interesting. I never listened to the full thing, and it has a wide variety of stuff on it.
It's a pretty impressive album.
Yeah, it has one song that kind of reminded me of Bruce Springsteen, and then the other song had like this like instrumental acoustic guitar intro with that. That must have been the other guy. It was like 3 minutes acoustic instrumental, and then like this great song. I mean, like that's a pretty impressive album. And it's not as sugary whisper. As I thought.
No, I mean, I think you know, "Wake Me Up" kind of sets the whole tone for the thing. It's not as sugary as that, but and then I don't even know if they did another album before George Michael went solo. I don't think they did. And so George was just kind of pushed him to the side. But I guess you'd say the album has the reputation based off of "Wake Me Up,"
right? But it has definitely more depth than I originally thought. And another album that has more depth. Madonna, 1983. No, it doesn't have any depth, but it's really good, guys. Don't you think it's really good? 1983, Holiday?
Or not.
Come on.
No.
Borderline?
No. She cannot jump sing. On Madonna.
You guys don't. Aaron, none of you guys.
I'm shocked, man. You're all about the vocals. She's one of the worst singers I recall from that era.
Yo, but the melodies are to die for. Borderline?
I think she got better. I don't like her voice on that record, but I think she found herself as an artist later on.
Oh, totally.
You know, and that's, I can get down with some later Madonna, but this one is not for me.
I just give it a chance.
You know, this playlist is a fantastic elliptical playlist or workout playlist, because just there's a lot of, like, you know, just kind of poppy stuff, and then you get weird, and it's like it's a great mixed bag. So this is
here.
this one will stick around.
Well, you just got to take around. Off that when you're listening to elliptical. You just got to take off that Brian Jones thing, man, because otherwise you'll fall right off.
I'll suddenly feel incredibly stoned, and yeah, fall off the elliptical.
Lose all sense of space and time.
Edibles, whatever.
But I
yeah. So go ahead, Brendan. Go ahead.
Well, I think. Kind of piggybacking on Adam's thing that he's bringing up, like what qualifies a guilty pleasure? Because, like, okay, Taylor Swift 1989, you're not gonna walk up to like a 16-year-old girl and be like, that's a guilty pleasure record, you know, young lady. You know, it's all about whose pick it is. Like, it's all relative as to, in terms of the nature of the guilty pleasures. And so I think what makes a guilty pleasure is how unassuming it is for the beholder. To me, I don't know. I just want you guys to weigh in on that.
I was thinking also of, I mean, you're my audience, right? So I was also thinking about you guys, right? And so what albums could I pick that will really just get your ghost?
Same. I was thinking exactly that.
I was like, oh, that's Justin Timberlake. They're not going to like this one.
Yeah. Playing worse.
So that's a big part of it. So, with that as a scenario, I think Freddie won with that Brian Jones thing. I think you're the winner.
I think we've all accomplished that and more.
Well, even your Dr. Dre 1999 album, like, that's the most off the wall crazy one.
So you want to go ahead. Go ahead.
I do want to comment on that. As way back in the time, you know, this is our 26th or so podcast, way many podcasts ago, we did a favorite debut albums. I almost picked Snoop Dogg's Doggy Style, which is of the same, you know, West Coast 90s. I mean, this is right at the tail end of that. Sure. But I'm like, I was listening to the, I mean, and I like, you know, as I'm the appointed resident hip hop person, I like a lot of hip hop, and a lot of it holds up to me. But I listen back to Doggy Style. I'm like, sophomoric. Once again, it's just like, you know, the lyrics just didn't get to me. And I was listening to Dre again. I'm like, that whole West Coast '90s thing just did not really hold. I mean, just the image of it just, I don't know, didn't hold up for me compared to, like, you know, like the late '80s, the Public Enemies, the Tribe, the De La Souls, or even some of the more contemporary ones I like.
Does anyone listen to older hip hop? Like, for me, it was this LL Cool J record, and it just sounds funny. Like, when I listen to old hip, and like back in the day, it was like, this was like groundbreaking and like such a big statement. I listen to it now, I'm like, it just makes me laugh a little bit.
Yeah, it was so hard back then.
Yes,
it's interesting you should mention that, because believe it or not, Grandpa Freddy, back in the day, I used to listen to WKDU. Was one of the first stations in the area, Drexel University, to play hip hop. And I guess this would have been late 70s, 77, somewhere around there. And it was so raw. It was basically just a guy or a couple of guys and a drum machine. That was it. And that's the stuff that I initially first listen to as hip hop. And this brings me to the question of, what is a guilty pleasure? If it's something that you came up with and it's part of your background growing up as a kid, then it's not a guilty pleasure. It's who you are.
Unless you're ashamed of yourself.
Well, yeah. I'm guilty of that.
which is very possible.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, no, no, I'm with you. I'm with you. Yeah.
I was ashamed of that Justified thing back then too, man. I was listening to it way back then, Adam. I didn't tell you guys. I didn't tell anybody. I didn't know. We weren't going on gigs and be like, yo, guys, check this album out. Or like 3-hour gigs to New York. Hey, guys, on the ride back, I got this new album.
The famous Aaron CD shuffle. Yeah.
It never happened that way.
This is back, you know, back in the CD, the car CD era, and have his like 96 CD wallet. And he'd be like, pop in one CD, listen to one track, pop it out. Pop in another CD, listen to this one track, almost finish it, pop it out. Pop in another. But he never did Justified and all that. Never did Justified on those trips.
That was for the ride home in his own car.
Yeah. That was, I had that in my car because it was a guilty pleasure.
Same thing with me and Dre. You know. Yeah.
So on that though, I think we're gonna have to come back to this guilty pleasure thing, and I think we're gonna have to go more hardcore than we
dig a little deeper. Yeah. I feel like I got a little undressed with. I think I pretty much was shown that none of mine are all that guilty, and now I'm feeling like a bit of a fraud.
Well, you know, you are. On that note, thank you guys for listening. On behalf of Freddie, Adam, and Brendan, this is Aaron Brown, John Stockton, on the podcast. Thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week. Take care.
Right, fiction.